The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson, to give him his full title, is no more as British Prime Minister, although he kind of is for another little bit. But he has announced from the lectern outside Downing Street his resignation speech, and we'll have a whole range of voices on this story between now and 7 o'clock. Also coming up, we'll be looking at World Chocolate Day. Oh yes, what a day to be doing a radio show with that falling on my watch. Also we have looking at why are we so damn upbeat about the weather. Is it the triumph of hope over expectation? We'll have George Monbiot on the future of the global food industry, and we'll also be looking at the cost of dentistry depending on where you live in Ireland. So it's a busy show between now and 7 o'clock. As I said, my name is Emmett Oliver, sitting in here for Kieran today. So the moment has arrived. We had two resignations 48 hours ago of the Chancellor and the Health Secretary. We kind of knew something was going to happen, but there had been some talk about it going into next week. There had been some talk about Boris Johnson fighting a further rearguard action, but he has bowed to the pressure, the inevitable pressure. The sheer drip, drip, drip of the resignations really meant it was inevitable. So what has he been saying? Let's have a quick listen to what his few final parting words were.
And the reason I have fought so hard in the last few days to continue to deliver that mandate in person was not just because I wanted to do so, but because I felt it was my job, my duty, my obligation to you to continue to do what we promised in 2019. And of course, I'm immensely proud of the achievements of this government, from getting Brexit done to settling our relations with the continent for over half a century, reclaiming the power for this country to make its own laws in Parliament, getting us all through the pandemic, delivering the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe, the fastest exit from lockdown, and in the last few months, leading the West in standing up to Putin's aggression in Ukraine. And in the last few days, I've tried to persuade my colleagues that it would be eccentric to change governments when we're delivering so much, and when we have such a vast mandate, and when we're actually only a handful of points behind in the polls. I regret not to have been successful in those arguments, and of course it's painful not to be able to see through so many ideas and projects myself. But as we've seen at Westminster, the herd instinct is powerful, and when the herd moves, it moves. And my friends, in politics, no one is remotely indispensable. I know that there will be many people who are relieved, and perhaps quite a few who will also be disappointed. And I want you to know how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the breaks.
Them's the breaks. That's the final word. No tears from Boris Johnson, in contrast to Theresa May. And I think that last speech kind of summed him up. Buoyant kind of mood, very verbose speech. Long-winded, ultimately fairly flamboyant, kind of summed up all the different parts of, sub-parts of the character of Boris Johnson. But he is on his way, the exact departure date still to be debated, the timeline of that to be announced next week. Now, joining me, we have a number of voices on this and a number of perspectives. One of those comes from Antoinette Sandbach, who is a former Tory MP, now a Liberal Democrat, probably call her a recovering Tory MP, former member of the 1922 committee. We're also joined by Tom Baldwin, who's a former special advisor to the Labour Party, including Ed Miliband, of course, the Labour leader. And we also have Enda Brady, who is a journalist based in London who's been following political developments there for many years. Enda, good evening to you, first of all.
Hey, Emma, it's good to speak to you.
It is very much so. So bring us right up to speed. We know he's going. He's given a speech. Them's the breaks were the final parting words. They were the kind of the soundbite for the evening news. But when does he go? How does he go? Still a little bit unclear. Is that correct?
Well, we haven't got a date. You know, I think there's a process, obviously, that has to be followed. And a lot of people here in the UK now will be just realising that it's a bit of a flawed system, in that we now have a lame duck government, a limping prime minister who has been forced out, but no date for his departure. And he wants to keep going until September, until we get into party conference season. But already people will be manoeuvring themselves to get into pole position to become the next leader of the Conservative Party.
Well, Enda is manoeuvring. We get it back in a second. Antoinette, good evening to you.
Good evening.
You're a former member of the 1922 committee. You've been at their meetings. You know what the atmosphere has been. Have you been surprised at how quickly the resignations piled up And were you surprised when he actually came out this morning and finally called it a day, or was it actually your surprise that it took this long?
I'm surprised it took this long when Sir Graham Brady and senior members of the cabinet resign. That would lead to a Prime Minister resigning, and I would have suggested, having been aware in the parliamentary party, he should have a lot sooner, and he didn't. It took 50%.
We'll come back to you in a second, Antoine. Your line is just a little bit sketchy at the moment. Tom Baldwin, can I bring you in? Good evening to you, first of all. Welcome to the Hard Shoulder.
Hello.
What do you make of what Antoine is saying? It was really the pile-up of pressure. It was just accumulation. You had the Pincher scandal, the three Ps, the Patterson, the Pincher scandal. And you had Partygate, of course, was the third P. Do you think it was just sort of successive pressure building, or was there something about this Pincher thing that kind of pushed him over the edge?
I think people have now recognised that he is not a fit and proper person to be running a government, let alone the country. The bizarre thing today is, like, having had everybody say, look, you know, we don't want him driving the school bus anymore, he said, okay, I promise not to drive it, but I can't just drive it for the rest of the summer. And, you know, he's not responsible. He's, you know, the guy has lied repeatedly. He has shown zero integrity. He is a threat to every standard of democracy that I can think of. And the idea of this guy continuing to be in office for a few more weeks as some sort of, you know, letting go of some dignity, I mean, it is wrong. I mean, he's not leaving with his head held high after doing great things. He's a disgrace to this country, and he should be out of the door now.
But is there not a gap in kind of British constitutional systems that there's no real method to kind of budge him out immediately until you've another leader in the Tory party? Like, he's just taking advantage of a deficient system.
Yeah, and she's taken advantage of a deficient system time and time again over the last few years, which is why he became Prime Minister in the first place. There are rules, and, you know, he's broken most of them. There is a Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab, who could take over if he decided to leave Downing Street. But Boris Johnson says, I'm not going to leave Downing Street. And now we're reliant on another group of Conservative backbenchers who've shown to have as much sort of backbone as sort of an earthworm over the last few years, to see whether they can hasten his departure by a few weeks. He's still in charge of the country. He's still, as far as I know, pushing forward a bill to rip up the Northern Ireland Protocol, which he campaigned on in the general election back in 2019 as a brilliant deal.
Well, don't worry about that, Tom. We'll be zoning in on that particular legislative threat later on in the programme. We have a few guests to talk about from an Irish perspective, and the two countries are very much tied closely together about future political developments. Let me go back to Enda Brady. Enda, are you there?
Yeah, I am, Emma.
So we don't have a date, right? Obviously, in the vacuum that builds up, we'll have all sorts of candidates. I see already, and I don't want to call this too early, but I've looked at the odds checker system. They compile all the odds across all the different bookmakers. They're looking at Rishi Sunak at 5-1. You're looking at Ben Wallace, who's the Defence Secretary, at 6-1. Penny Mordaunt, she's at 7-1. Liz Truss, further back, surprisingly, because it had been conventionalism, she was further up, but she's 10-1. Saj Javid is further back. And I won't go through all the names. Many of them might not be that familiar to our listeners because there's so many of them. Ben Wallace in particular seems to be kind of an early favourite. Are you getting any sense from where you are about who might come through this system, or is it all just when is Johnson going and not much interest in the runners and riders at this stage?
I think there's a huge interest in who's going to run this country for the foreseeable future. I mean, this is a massive, massive issue for Britain. Look, I live in the Henley-on-Thames constituency in Oxfordshire. It is Boris Johnson heartlands. People there are heartily sick of him, and they're really, really concerned about the future of the Conservative Party, the way things have been going. I mean, this is dyed-in-the-wool blue Conservative territory for a century, and people are very, very angry. So I think what you're going to see, you'll have some strange characters sticking their hat in the ring just for the sake of a bit of publicity, but ultimately they will be whittled down to two by the members of the Parliamentary Party, and those final two names will go on the ballot. Now, last time round, Jeremy Hunt ended up facing off against Boris Johnson, and Johnson hammered him quite decisively. this time round, I don't rule out Liz Truss. She's extremely popular at grassroots level. She has been campaigning behind the scenes very diligently. She's hugely ambitious. But then you've got Ben Wallace as well, who is seen as having had a good 18 months as Defence Secretary, really. A lot of positive things said about him. There will be candidates who will come back. Jeremy Hunt, I think, will chuck his name in the ring as well. Look, they'll whittle it down to two. It goes out to the membership. But I think people in the Conservative Party will realise that unless they want to lose the next election, they need to come up with someone that can be seen as honest, transparent, and working for the greater good of this country and not for themselves. Because they've realised far too late that you wouldn't trust Boris Johnson to run a bath, let alone a country.
That's not an image I want to dwell on. But Antoinette Sandbach, you're back on the phone. Antoinette,
I am.
Yeah, you've been in the 1922 Committee, as I said. You know the procedures, you know the protocols. How does this actually play out? I mean, there's a certain sense of Johnson is gone. People are looking at it as a political obituary, etc. But he's not gone. So how do you see it playing out technically? What's the next move you'd expect? Is there going to be a caretaker? Dominic Raab has been mentioned. Is Johnson just going to hold the fort? What way would you expect it to play out?
The first thing is that the 1922 elections are going to happen on Monday, and all the potential leadership candidates will be vying to get their people elected onto the 22, because the 22 decides the timing and the process of the leadership contest. As you know, and as your previous speaker explained, it's the MPs that whittle it down to the last two. There are a lot of new MPs that were elected in 2019 who don't know many of the long-standing MPs, maybe aren't, you know, want to know what the policy platforms are. And as you're seeing at the moment, a conflict in Westminster about whether or not a caretaker leader should be appointed, or whether Dominic Raab should step up or Johnson stay. And the reality is that there's no constitutional process for Raab to step in. And I think it'll be quite hard to leverage out Johnson. So the process, the timetable that's been made clear so far is that the new leader will need to be in place by the time of the Conservative Party conference.
And how much decision-making power does Boris Johnson have while he's waiting around? Can he do an honours list? Can he get legislation through? Can he make foreign policy? What can he do or not do? Or has he just got a pretty much an open field?
I think his powers are limited. He may be able to do he did a recent New Year's honours list. Whether or not, I think departing prime ministers are allowed to do a final honours list. And I believe that Theresa May did one. But his hands will be pretty tied, and any controversial legislation going through Parliament at the moment is unlikely to succeed, given that a new leader may take a different view. And that's what Conservative MPs will be asking of the candidates. You know, what is your policy platform? What is the legislation that you want to bring forward? How much of the manifesto on which Johnson was elected are you going to stick to? And we saw in 2019 that a lot of Theresa May's manifesto was ditched by Johnson, and that's a precedent that he set. And so potentially the policy platform is wide open, as well as the candidates, the field of candidates being wide open.
Yes, I mean, well, obviously on this side of the Irish Sea, we're looking to see what happens with the overriding of large parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol. Will that still make its way through, or will that be put into a siding, a cold storage? And we'll be talking to Bobby McDonagh, ex-Foreign Affairs here and Ambassador later on in the programme, about what his take on that is. If I could bring you back in, Tom, you're a Labour Party. You've advised people at a very senior level of that party. You've looked at some of the list. Enda mentioned some of the candidates, Ben Wallace, Rishi Sunak, of course, ex-Chancellor. If you've got your Labour Party hat on, just pick out for me the candidates you'd say to yourself, that person could be a problem for us, that person could be formidable, and equally pick out the candidates you kind of go, I would love if they picked that person. It would really, really hand us an advantage. Or do you think they're all a bit bland?
They're not bland. There are certainly candidates that would continue the madness. Liz Truss is the one that leaps to mind. I'm not sure it's necessarily to the advantage of the Labour Party or indeed the country to continue the madness. I think at some point you just have to sort of step back and say, we do actually need the legally responsible government to actually conduct politics in a normal way again. I think there's also, Jeremy Hunt would make politics conventional again, and it would certainly make it easier, you could argue, for the Labour Party to win back some of those northern seats. So would Rishi Sunak, I think, because he's a sort of straightforward Thatcherite cost cutter, tax cutter and cost cutter. I think there's a danger too, though, that we're setting the bar for the next prime minister too low. Are we saying that if we have a prime minister who doesn't lie day in, day out, or break every rule, or break the law, then somehow everything's going to be fine again? If not, we're in the middle of a war. We're in the middle of trying to rip up a treaty with the European Union, which this country signed, barely a year ago. We are in the middle of a cost of living crisis. There are fundamental things wrong with this country. And it's not enough just to say we're going to bring back some basic level of honour and decency into government. I think what the Labour Party should be standing on now is saying there are real problems with this country which go back to 12 years of Tory misrule. And we need to start taking on the challenges facing this country in the future, climate change, technology, Brexit, and start talking about Brexit again.
But doesn't like some of these doesn't some of these candidates though suit Keir Starmer a little bit better? I mean, whatever else you say about Keir Starmer, I don't think anyone in the Labour Party is saying he's fabulously charismatic. He gets accused of being bland, right? Now, that's difficult when you're in opposition because you don't have things to excite in your base. You don't have legislation, etc. But, I mean, his problem with Boris Johnson was he was like trying to scoop up mercury with a fork. He was very difficult to get a handle on. He was a contrast to Keir Starmer. If Keir Starmer gets a more conventional politician that's sort of, that you mentioned, a Jeremy Hunt or a Dominic Raab or even a Ben Wallace, I mean, does that not make life a bit easier for Keir Starmer in the sense that he's just going up against an everyday standard packaged up politician, whereas Johnson was different and that made it challenging for Keir Starmer to kind of combat him on the floor of the House and just generally in how the media frame these things?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, what Keir said is that his whole life before he became an MP, only entered politics at the age of 52, his whole life before was as a lawyer. And if you work as a lawyer and you're in court, you're used to arguing on the basis of facts. And he said he found it quite difficult to go up against Johnson because Johnson just didn't deal with facts. He would make up facts as he went along. And it's quite difficult to have a debate if you can't actually establish what facts you're dealing with in the first place. So in some ways, I think a change will suit Keir Starmer. I think Johnson is we shouldn't underestimate how appealing he was to many people. He was unpredictable. Sure. He seemed unconventional. And I think this may well signal a return to a more conventional politics.
Sure. Let me go back to
make it easier for someone like Keir Starmer.
Sure. Okay. And let me go back to Enda. Enda, what does the next few days hold? I mean, is Boris Johnson going to do any work or is he taking a holiday? Or do you have any sense of what the machinery of government grinds on? Or does anyone know anything about what he's going to be doing with himself?
Emma, I think that's the first time I've heard the words Boris Johnson and work in the same sentence. Look, whatever happens, hand on heart, I came to England when I was 17 years old. It has given me a phenomenal life and an incredible living. I think of all the working class towns I've reported from in the last couple of years, from Motherwell up in Scotland to Port Talbot in South Wales, Plymouth down in the southwest of England, Stoke-on-Trent in the English Midlands. These are towns and communities that have been hammered in the last 12 years. I mean, places that are really going backwards. Working class families who are working and struggling to put food on the table, they deserve so much better than what they've had over the last few years. It's desperately, desperately sad. This country deserves so much better. And I just hope that whatever happens, the new leader start getting working and putting this country first and the party interest to one side and just driving things forward and making Britain better, because honestly, people here are in for a very, very difficult few years ahead. I mean, the cost of living crisis I see today we've got supermarkets putting security tags on blocks of cheese. That is Boris Johnson's legacy. And it's no joke. It's no joke.
No. Okay, well, listen, on that slightly depressing economic thought, Enda Brady, who is a reporter based there in London, you'd know his Irish accent. He's been there for many years, as I said, giving him a good living. Antoinette Sandbach, before that, she's a former Tory MP, recovering now in the Liberal Democrats. And Tom Baldwin, who is a former government special advisor and advisor to Ed Miliband.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.